You're listening to WRT 89.9 FM, Madison.
BBC News with Sue Montgomery. Hundreds of thousands of people have been protesting in towns and cities across Greece to mark 2 years since a rail disaster that killed 57 people. In Athens, hooded protesters threw petrol bombs at police. There were clashes outside the Greek parliament as officers tried to disperse the angry crowds with tear gas. The demonstrators say they want justice for the people killed when a passenger service collided with a freight train near the Tempe Gorge. No one has been convicted. Helena Smith is in Athens.
What has stoked so much of this public outrage here in Greece is this sense of a government cover-up, and that in the days after the state moved very, very quickly to clean up the scene of the tragedy, removing what could have been very vital evidence, including, if you can believe it, human remains, from the site of the crash by gravelling and cementing it over. None of that has helped assuage this public sense that somehow they're not being told the truth.
The Ukrainian president, Volodymyr Zelensky, is due to meet President Trump in Washington shortly for what correspondents are calling a crucial encounter. They'll be discussing how to end the war with Russia. From Kyiv, James Waterhouse reports.
After a fortnight of Donald Trump directing insults at him and increasingly siding with Moscow, today's arrival of Volodymyr Zelensky represents a coming in from the cold, but he is not yet warm. What has changed for the US president is the prospect of a deal which would give America access to billions of dollars worth of Ukraine's natural minerals. For Ukraine, today is more of a political punt. Despite appeals from Keir Starmer, who visited the White House yesterday, and President Macron, who was there earlier this week, President Zelensky has yet to obtain security guarantees from the US that he and Europe desperately want in order to curb Russian aggression in the future.
China has accused the United States of blackmail and coercion after President Trump announced an extra tariff of 10% on Chinese goods. Mr. Trump justified the additional tax by saying China hadn't done enough to stop the flow of the drug fentanyl into America. Beijing rejected the accusation, suggesting the issue was a pretext to threaten China. The UN Children's Agency says the US has confirmed an end to its funding of projects across its humanitarian and development work. UNICEF has warned the scale of the cuts will result in more children dying. It says the Trump administration's decision to suspend foreign aid has already affected its work. Washington provided nearly half of the UN's humanitarian budget last year. BBC News.
Support for this program comes from Edgewood College Theatre. Presenting Kimberly Bellflower's biting, funny new play, John Proctor is the Villain, directed by Jeannie Leap, February 28th to March 8th at the Diane Bullwig Theater. At a rural high school in Georgia, teens are studying The Crucible while navigating love, sex, and school scandals. Holding a contemporary lens to the American classic, they question, who is really the hero and what is the truth? Discovering their own power in the process. Tickets at edgewood.edu/about/events/theater or search Edgewood College Theater.
Hi, WRT listeners. Nominations for Madison Magazine's Best of Madison competition are now open through the end of February, and WORT qualifies this year in four categories: Best Local Podcast, Best Radio Team, Best Local News Site, and the brand new category of Best Volunteer Opportunity. WORT has fantastic local news, so that one's pretty easy, as well as many podcasts and radio teams. Think about your favorite shows, and chances are that at least one of them fits into these categories. WORT also boasts a crew of over 300 volunteers, so we're a shoo-in for Best Volunteer Opportunity. But we need your vote. How do you vote? We've made it simple. Just go to tinyurl.com/bestWORT to cast your vote. And you can nominate your favorites every day through the end of the month. So vote early and vote often. The final voting will take place in June. Thank you in advance.
missed the Friday 8 o'clock buzz. Andy Moore, God, there was a headwind coming in on the bike this morning, wasn't there, Jim? When I passed by Mechanics Row, that was some serious windy wind, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was quite the headwind, although it's supposed to get even stronger as the afternoon, the day gets into the afternoon.
But it'll be at our back when we go home.
When we go home, yes.
Folks, welcome. It's 63 degrees outside. Last week, I was, speaking of 63 degrees, visiting our daughter Maggie out in Los Angeles, and I want to thank Kia Carlin. Thank you so much for the gold medal work you did this hour a week ago. But let's stop living in the past, shall we? Now, let's talk about now, right? Friggin' now. It's the last Friday in February. Of course, January's longest month with 17 weeks. February has only 2 weeks, as everyone knows. And as you also know, there's something else happening on the calendar. It's the winter pledge drive. You know that. But you've been holding back your pocketbook for this hour, and thank you for doing that. Winter pledge, of course, just in time for 50-degree days. And in just a moment, I'm going to introduce you to my pledge partner for this morning, a true Madison celebrity. What the heck, I'll do that now.
Wow.
Senior pro golf champion Andy North is here. Kidding. Oh. Just kidding, Colleen. Stand by. We'll keep them in suspense. Oh. We won't introduce Colleen Hayes. Oh. We'll keep you in suspense as to who the celebrity pledge rapper is until just a moment. I've got to get this rap out of my, rant out of my system. But there's nothing stopping you from calling and clearing up this confusion right now, 608-256-2001. And talk to Mary Lou or Cynthia France out there helping us with taking your calls and your money. Please be generous. We have a goal that we want to try to make, as we always do here on The Buzz during the pledge drive, 608. Get started right now, then you can enjoy the show, 256-2001. We talked about Andy North for a second, but speaking of other celebrities who are modest and humble, I got to get this off my chest. It's been a terrific week for Elon Musk. Just think, this time last year, he was a nobody. He had $364 billion, but a nobody other than that. And now, he's running the country. Did you see any of the video of Trump's first cabinet meeting on Wednesday, also known as the one-man Elon Musk circle jerk? Did you see any of that, Colleen?
I sure did.
Yeah. I loved every second of it, because I focused my eyes not on Elon Musk. Instead, my eyes were drawn to watch the row of faces in the background. Those faces belong to the row of stiff 70-year-old white guys in suits. You know who they are, the elected Republican congressional mainstream dudes who sat there with their backs to the wall, who were forced to gather in the room to represent, the people.
Oh, right, yeah.
And they looked at Musk with an expression that couldn't have shown more confusion and discomfort than, than if a rodeo clown had been given the floor for important remarks, and then the rodeo clown, a good one, not a mediocre one, proceeded to jump in and out of a barrel and sprint around the room waving his hands over his head. The looks on those elected Republican lifers, it was priceless. You may not have agreed with their politics 30 years ago or even now, but at least their politics were attached to actual lawful policy. But Wednesday, they were forced to applaud for a guy, that being Musk, that if he was sitting at a table next to them at a fancy restaurant, they'd ask to get moved to another table. You could see it on their old tired faces. I'm serious, Coco. I'm begging everyone to look up that cabinet meeting on YouTube, please, and watch it. You're going to love it. Even if you love Trump, you'll spit coffee laughing when you concentrate on the abject pain and suffering in their eyes as Musk carries on in his black t-shirt.
Yeah.
A black t-shirt! The t-shirt alone, no doubt, freaked those guys out. I bet it was the first time any of those old white Republican guys were actually in the same room with a grown man wearing a black t-shirt.
They're like, we'll take Obama's tan suit at this point.
Unbelievable. Right. They've probably seen grown men in black t-shirts only like in movies. But I bet a ham sandwich they've never shared actual physical space with a grown guy in a black t-shirt. You'll just have to watch and see for yourself. Speaking of myself, I needed a good laugh in the face of the Stephen King novel we're living right now. When you watch it, you'll think to yourself, Andy was right. That was the funniest thing I've seen in 6 weeks. Then the next thing you'll say to yourself is, how could I ever thank him? Well, Colleen Hayes, How could they ever thank us?
You know how they could thank you, Andy Moore? I think they could probably donate to WORT.
They'll probably be relieved to because the rant is over. How are they going to donate to us?
Well, they're going to donate. They could do a few things. They could just go right online to WORTFM.org, or they could call here at the station. And we've got two pledge phone answerers. Is that a correct term? Phone answerer?
Yeah, it is.
Okay,
yeah. It's in the book.
Right, okay. And 256-2001.
That's
area
right.
Area code 608.
Colleen Hayes is, there's no one better to ask the community for help since she does so much for our community. So we're honored to have you, Colleen. For those of you who don't know Colleen, the seven or eight of you in Dane County, she's the pedestrian outreach bicycle specialist for the city of Madison, proudly wearing a La Follette High School t-shirt this morning. You're just hitting every target here. But we need you to hit the target that is maybe even an online donation. How can they do that?
They can go, they can open up their computers, they can open up their phones. You could just be laying in bed right now listening to this show on the radio. Today it's not a podcast, is it, Andy? Is it?
No,
is it
that's just... why I allowed the more casual dress.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, they just get on their phone and they go to WORTFM.org. And right at the top, you can find a spot to donate. Click on that button, and it'll just talk you right through it.
We have a bed here in the studio. Colleen and I are prone. We decided to do it John and Yoko style.
Yes, right.
And so that's what we're asking you to do. You can be a monthly donor, too. I don't know if we've ever had someone call in and do a monthly. And you can do that for any amount that you'd like each month. And so when Elliot or Mary Lou or Cynthia takes your call, and I hope you're calling while I'm talking and not even listening to this, say I want to be a monthly donor, and they can tell you how to do that, right?
They can tell you how to do that. It's very easy. And there are some options of, you could just donate and just say, I don't need any swag, but there's lots of great swag, including a new long sleeve t-shirt.
Yes.
I saw something about.
Yes, with a really cool logo. We'll get into the swagginess in just a little bit. Thank you again, Colleen. We're going to get some other kinds of content on, namely some guests. I'm really happy with the guest list this morning. We're going to start out hearing about the Chronicles of the Ukraine War by an author, photographer, and filmmaker, Chip Duncan, a Wisconsin filmmaker and writer and poet who spent a considerable amount of time on the streets in Ukraine and wrote a book about it. It's called A Different War. At about half past the hour, Eddie Nix, the owner of the Driftless Bookstore in Viroqua, is going to tell us about what it was like to come down last Sunday and empty the shelves of the newly closed Paul's Bookstore. The Viroqua Bookstore Driftless inherited all the remaining inventory of Paul's books. So we're going to ask Eddie what holding that legacy is like. And then we're going to hear all about the big Beatles show at the Barrymore, the Madison Mystery Tour show, and we'll have some live music at the end of the hour. All of that, plus we're going to celebrate all the phone money you've called in with, right?
I love a good celebration on a Friday.
and she speaks the truth. 608-256-2001. It's the Friday 8 o'clock buzz. Let's get buzzing.
I don't care about you, it's Friday, I'm in love. Monday you can fall apart, Tuesday, Wednesday break my heart, Thursday doesn't even start, it's Friday, I'm in love. Saturday, wait, Sunday always comes too late, Friday. Thursday, never looking back, it's Friday, I'm in love.
It's the Friday 8 o'clock buzz, I'm Andy Moore. There's a group of professionals in this country with arguably the most important and most dangerous jobs historically in the world. War correspondents, journalists like Hemingway during World War I, Marguerite Higgins covering Korea and Vietnam, Daniel Pearl following the 9/11 attacks writing from Pakistan. Now comes Wisconsin filmmaker, photographer, and author Chip Duncan. He documented time in the ongoing heat of war in Ukraine for his latest book called A Different War. It's a different war, as he explains in the book, but this is a different journalistic account of war as well. It's stories and photographs, all compelling, some brutally so, are shared alongside poetry. If you're struggling with our current administration's dismissal of Ukraine, a dismissal that will be on display in Washington just a few hours from now when Ukraine President Zelensky meets with President Trump, then this book will intensify that struggle, but in important ways that only well-reported accounts of crisis can achieve. Chip Duncan joins us from downtown Milwaukee by phone. Good morning, Chip, and welcome to the Friday Buzz.
Hello, Andy. Good to be on.
Your book is filled with contemporary cultural and political context, but give us the backdrop of the project. How did you decide to visit Ukraine war, and how much did you know about the people there before you went?
Well, as some people, some of your listeners might know, because I'm fairly local, I've been documenting crisis, conflict zones, natural disasters, that sort of thing, since the late 90s, and I try to devote as much time to it as I can every year. So I've done Afghanistan and Darfur and a number of different places. But I was invited to Ukraine with a group out of Washington, D.C., and they knew my background. I said I'd be delighted to join them. And our whole focus was on the impact of the war on real people in Ukraine, not so much a frontline account, although we certainly were in some significantly difficult parts of Ukraine, but really to try to, you know, see what was happening to real people, what their needs were, mostly medical and special needs. And so one trip led to another, and then pretty soon there were three, and headed back at the end of April for my fourth visit.
Oh, man. Here's a form question for you, specific to A Different War, the book. We'll be treated, listeners, to a poem from this remarkable book later in the segment, but as a creator, Chip, what do you think poetry can accomplish that prose and pictures cannot?
Well, that's a question that really relies a lot on the actual reader or listener to the poetry itself. But I've found that it's the abstraction of poetry kind of aligns with war. And, you know, the tradition of war poetry goes back to Homer. I mean, I recently did a talk in Washington, D.C. and started with war poetry from Walt Whitman that was written literally down the street from the place I was speaking. And you know, one of my favorite poets of recent times is Victoria Hamelina, who's a Ukrainian poet that was killed in a pizza restaurant, just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time about 18 months ago. And I think the style of it, the reading of it, the emotion, the intensity, but also because it's abstract and because metaphor and is such a big part of poetry, I think people oftentimes can relate to it by looking at their own circumstances. And in this case, a lot of it's focused, I didn't expect this when I started writing it, but a lot of it's focused on the separation from loved ones. So ironic to me, because it wasn't intentional, there are three poems in the book that are, you know, in any other context, they're romantic.
Oh my!
Because yeah. You know, you feel the distance between lovers who are separated by the conflict.
Oh. And I want to drill down into some specific experience with the people there, and I have an unconventional way to try to do that. The preface of the book lists three primary areas of your curiosity going into this project in Ukraine. Those three areas: love, light, and hope. I'd like to ask you for a brief example of what you found there. One example from each of those categories, starting with love. Can you give us an example of that?
Yeah, actually, it might fit all three categories. But at one point, I was in the western city of Lviv and at a military hospital. And when I go into a military hospital in Ukraine, I'm not allowed to photograph the faces of the soldiers who are there, in many cases having just undergone amputations, or and they're in a rehabilitation process. But I walked into a small room in the U.S. in a hospital, it might have two people in it, maybe one, depending on the hospital. But there were four soldiers in this room. And it was dark. It was, you know, unfortunately kind of dingy. And all four were badly injured. But one of them had a woman sitting next to his bed. They were, I now know them fairly well. They're Alexei and Julia. Julia's 45 years old. Alexei's 49. But he was sitting upright on the bed, but he was missing his right arm. And so the others kind of ignored me, but he smiled at me. I said hello. He said hello in English. I stuck my left hand out to shake his left hand. And he introduced the woman and said, "This is my wife. Or this is my wife, this is my helper, and this is my best friend." And he introduced her, and then in the book, I photographed her with him out of focus in the background, so you can see his amputation. But since I've gotten to know them, their love story is tremendous, and one of the most beautiful parts of it is, after his injury, 48 hours later, he was wearing his wedding ring on the arm that was destroyed in the conflict, and fellow soldiers went back to the scene and found the wedding ring and returned it to him, and he now wears it on his left hand.
So, oh my, that's almost overwhelming. Wow, let's let that speak for all three categories, even as you suggested, Chip. You take us straight into a very personal, and the book is filled with them, experience, and your own and those with whom you spoke. Let's pull out a couple thousand feet for a moment. Please tell us, how would you describe the day-to-day mindset of the people, both warriors and civilians, who you met and photographed in Ukraine?
I think it's changed regularly and consistently through the course of the war. So initially, I think if you talk to anybody on the street, nobody in Ukraine was taking the threat of invasion seriously. So if you go back to late February 2022, it just didn't seem plausible. And that was true for me. I was mindful of it. I was aware of what was going on. And nobody really thought Putin would do what he did. Once that started, and especially with that invasion from the north down towards Kyiv and the destruction of an entire city called Bucha, that whole area was, you know, just wiped out. And what happened very quickly, thanks, I think, mostly to Zelensky, is the country united. And it united in his case. I have friends who did not vote for him, Ukrainian friends, but now would support him completely. And he did not run. He could have, you know, look at Ashraf Ghani in Afghanistan. You know, as soon as the crap hit the fan, you know, Ghani packed up all of the money he could and moved to, you know, to Qatar. In this case, Zelensky said, no, this is an illegal invasion. We're opposed to it. So he stayed. And I think that helped unify Ukraine to say, we're here, we're Ukrainian, we're not Russian, we're going to fight. And that's what happened. And then more recently, especially in the last 6-7 weeks, and a lot of the dawdling that the U.S. has been doing around who are we, what are we going to support this war? You know, is this transactional? Do we just want money for minerals? What's going on? And I think the spirit has changed again, and it will probably continue to as this plays out. But the one thing I can tell you for sure, with the exception of far eastern parts of Ukraine where there's more cultural overlap, I would say the overwhelming majority of Ukrainians are going to fight for their independence no matter what.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with author, poet, journalist, and filmmaker Chip Duncan. His latest book of photography, storytelling, and poems is a documentation of his time in Ukraine during the current war with Russia. It's called A Different War. Chip, you carry into these international stories, as you suggested a moment ago, a rather comprehensive knowledge of American political history based on your past projects. Your feature-length films have been carried on PBS and other services, include biopics on Reagan presidency, as well as Herbert Hoover, just to name two. In light of the meeting between Ukraine President Zelensky and President Trump that's going to happen today in Washington, and this is a heavy assignment, if you could act as a go-between the two this afternoon, what would you say?
Well, I would actually say to the President Trump, that is, come with me. to Ukraine. I remember when Tucker Carlson did his report from Moscow and then with Putin, and then went to a fancy shopping center and said, oh, everything's rosy in Russia. It's like, you really need to get out and see and experience and feel what's going on. And we've had a lot of courageous people in Congress from both parties who have gone to Ukraine and been to the hospitals and been, seen the destruction. And that's what I would say to President Trump is, leave Mar-a-Lago for a couple of days and fly over there and see it and meet the people who've innocent people. I mean, we focus on the special needs community. It's an atrocity what has happened to people who are autistic or in wheelchairs or, in any way disabled and have no resources, the elderly. The victims of this war are civilians and for no reason. I mean, a lot of people were able to get out early on who had reason to. So the refugees in surrounding countries, there's, probably in the range of 5 to 6 million people in Poland, Romania, Hungary, Germany. But those who have stayed and been dislocated, massive issues. And, I focus in the book on a little girl named Liza. Her house in Bakhmut was destroyed. Her legs were destroyed. She will never walk. And yet she's the most inspiring person I've ever met. I mean, stunning resilience and just the integrity of her experience. If Trump could see that, I think it would change everything. Well, maybe.
Chip, what do you tell people briefly? I want to ask you to share a poem before we lose you. But before we do that, what do you tell people when they ask you, how can I help?
Well, I think building relationships is key. There are a number of organizations. If somebody wants, I'll just throw it out. I will respond to anybody who writes to me. It's through my email address, chip@duncanentertainment.com. But I can put them in touch with different not-for-profits who are supporting. Med Global out of Chicago is an excellent organization that is doing high-quality medical work on the front. They have trauma specialists that are teaching surgery on the front. Their own people are. Med Global is an interesting group because they're also in Gaza. Those are the two countries they're working in. But there's lots of groups like that. I will say, to just hats off to Howard Buffett from the Buffett Foundation, the Buffett family, who's done extraordinary philanthropy in Ukraine. But if anybody wants to write to me, I'll give them a list. I'll send them a list of different NGOs that I'm familiar with. There's a lot.
Fantastic. Finally, let's let poetry have the last word. I ask you to select a poem from the book to read aloud. Will you set that up and read it for us now?
Yeah, I will. The poems in the book are very personal, and in many cases, they're based on people that I met in Ukraine. Some people may not realize this, but school kids in Kherson and Kharkiv, a lot of the schools are now in the subways below ground because of all of the bombings. And I met a girl, her class was on a little retreat to Western Ukraine to get away from the fighting. They had come over on a school bus, about 30 kids. And I met her and the class when we were all in the same place. Her name was Larissa. And she was really engaged in what I call magical things. She spoke great English, but she loved J.R.R. Tolkien and Harry Potter and all of that, and wanted to be a writer someday. So I'm going to read just a short poem about Larissa. This is called Magical Things. Maybe there are monsters in the woods near Kherson. Maybe they have long guns with deadly bullets and mechanical birds with bombs. Maybe they have missiles that can flatten schools and rockets built to turn hospitals and houses into dust. I do know this. Monsters can turn out lights and turn off water, but monsters cannot find me because I believe in magical things, elves, fairies, wizards, and sprites. And for magical things, there is always more than war. Beware, monsters in the woods. My imagination was not lost in the rubble of my school. I see you.
Chip Duncan, thank you for joining us on the Friday Buzz.
Thank you very much, Andy.
Thank you.
Chip Duncan is a filmmaker, author, and poet. His latest book, from which Magical Things, that poem you just heard, was selected, is called A Different War. You can purchase the book on Amazon, but let's not do that. Instead, go to DuncanEntertainment.com. That's DuncanEntertainment.com, and you can write to Chip and ask how you can help in the effort in Ukraine and get his suggestions on that. Folks, poetry on the radio, hearing from faraway places in crisis and getting a deeper understanding is what we try to do here. And not to vault into profits and money-making out of a poignant offering as Chip was able to provide to us this morning, but it's what we try to do here on community radio, people. And we need you to support these kinds of efforts and these kinds of discussions if they work for you. And so that's what we're asking you to do this morning, to help us keep you in touch with writers and poets, with journalists, with filmmakers. The website is currently down, I'm told. So we're going to ask you to dial 608-256-2001 just as soon as you can, and tell the station that you want to keep a community, a global conversation in motion, especially in these times. It's a very important time to support community radio. Right, Colleen?
It really is, and it's unfortunate the website's down, but I like the idea that you're supporting community radio and then you need to talk to Cynthia or Mary Lou, not have to, but you get to talk to them to donate to community radio here in Madison, Wisconsin. And I think that's a pretty cool thing. So 608-256-2001, a quick call. They're pretty efficient. I talked to them on the way in and they seem to have it down pretty easily. So it'll be a quick call out of your day. And support stories like this. You know, Andy, I have to say, I was a little skeptical when you were going to be doing this 8 o'clock buzz. And every Friday I listen to your show and I either learn something new or I start crying like I just did when
Coco.
He told that story about the wedding ring and then read that mm-hmm. poem. Or I'm laughing when Riley is, or Scott Dickers is, you know, doing a joke bit. But, 608-256-2001, donate for, so you can hear Andy Moore on Friday mornings.
Well, I was skeptical when I sat down to do this program too. Colleen, I just love the example that you made of the web being down, but the listeners' ability to talk to people here, Mary Lou and Cynthia and Elliot. I just love that. It's the people that make this place tick. None of us are drawing salaries for the time we put in here, whether you're an engineer like Jim Wilson or running the front office and online producing like Elliot LeBrun does. I don't make any money doing this, but I do give during pledge drives, and I invite you to do that too, 608-256-2001.
And Andy, we do have someone who did call in a little bit earlier, a man by the name of Rit Dietz, if you're familiar.
Oh, Colonel Dietz, thank you
yes.
so much, my brother.
Yeah,
thank
we
you.
We appreciate you. Yep.
Why don't you join Rit? And Rit is a working stiff. He's a poor musician. He doesn't have money to throw around. Surely you can lift those couch cushions and find some spare change to throw to community radio. This is more important of a time than ever to keep the voices that WRT places on the air, to keep the world music and all the enlightenment that comes with it on the airwaves. Please join us and join Rit Dietz at 608-256-2001. It's just real important that we get this winter pledge drive aloft here on the Friday Buzz and send the rest of the terrific weekend programming. I got the dang radio on from after I get off the air until Sunday night. The next 3 days is just killer.
Oh, yeah. And I'm excited to listen to Mel and Floyd actually later on today because I'm sure they're going to have a lot to say.
Yes.
There.
Yes, you got that right.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a good preview. We could all do well to listen to that program this afternoon. Well, listen, we can't hear the phones out there, so it's up to you to make them ring. We're going to listen to some music, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to talk to the owner of Driftless Books, Mr. Eddie Dix. That's after some music. You're listening to WRT-FM Radio 89.9 in Madison, Wisconsin. It's 836.
Thank you. Support for this program comes from WORT's listener sponsors and Isthmus Newspaper. Isthmus is back on newsstands the first Thursday of every month, and now a nonprofit. Isthmus continues to expand its independent coverage of local government, the arts, and all things Madison at isthmus.com.
Ready to do something proactive to help your neighbors that have had to flee their homes due to conflict or climate change? Register today for the Returned Peace Corps Volunteers of Wisconsin's Freeze for Food 5K or 10K walk or run happening on Saturday, March 1st at noon at the Vilas Park Shelter. Freeze for Food raises funds to support Open Doors for Refugees, a nonprofit dedicated to helping our Madison refugee neighbors. Participants of all ages and abilities can run or walk along beautiful Lake Wingra. Proceeds from the Freeze for Food will be used for food security and relief efforts for Madison refugees. Registration and race information can be found at rpcvmadison.org by clicking on the Freeze for Food link. That's the 44th annual Freeze for Food race on Saturday, March 1st. You are listening to WORT 89.9 FM Madison and WORTFM.org.
It's the Friday 8 o'clock buzz. I'm Andy Moore. If you're like me, you wandered into Paul's Books on State Street many times before it closed last month. And you most likely wandered out with the exact Steinbeck novel you were looking for, or that world atlas to give to your dad for Father's Day, or a book by an author you've never heard of, but because of your 30 minutes of browsing paid off, you were introduced to a writer who would become your favorite. Paul's closed its doors last month after 70 years of operation on State. Then last Sunday morning, someone with the help of a handful of volunteers unpacked the tall shelves of the books remaining at Paul's, lovingly loaded them into a truck, and hauled them up to Verrocra, to one of the few remaining independent booksellers in the state. That someone was Eddie Nix, and his shop, Driftless Books, now houses the complete remaining inventory of Paul's books. Eddie Nix joins us by phone now from Verrocra. Good morning, Eddie, and welcome to the Friday Buzz.
Well, thank you. Good morning.
That wasn't the first time you've inherited, for want of a better word, the inventory of a closing store, but what was it like, what is it like to carry out the treasures of a store like Paul's, almost a rescue operation? What was it like, Sunday?
Yeah, it is. It's a lot like a rescue operation. You know, we're one of the last sort of folks who are crazy enough to come do that. And I think this is our 12th bookstore around the country that we've been able to sort of capture the remains of. You know, it's bittersweet. It was really wonderful because the daughters of the owners were there working very hard and, you know, had an emotional relationship with the store growing up there. So, you know, it was nice. It was, they felt it was a good evolution of the stock, and cool. We did too.
You talk about the people who were there to help out, or the family who was there to help out, all those helping hands. Books are made to be handled. I have to believe you think of all the hands that have touched books when you work with them.
Yeah, you really do. And, you know, when you do something like this, you have to touch it probably about 10 times before it actually goes on to the next person, whether it's shipping it out on the internet or having it in our store in Verrocra. Yeah, it's really a labor of love, but these things are, you know, important artifacts that need to be saved. And especially in our culture now, where books are becoming a little less important than they were in the past, you know, just preserving them is important.
Is it possible to say approximately how many books were left for Driftless when Paul's closed?
You know, it's hard to estimate when you're doing it. We filled up a big 26-foot truck.
Wow.
Some of it was shelves. Most of it was books. So 10,000, I don't know. You know, it's hard to say at that point.
How many years have you run Driftless Books in Verrocra, Eddie?
We've been doing it 20 years now. So
you must have a very developed eye for standout editions of classics and rare books, et cetera. Does one volume stand out among the books you rescued from Paul's last weekend?
You know, when I did it, I didn't even look at one title, honestly. You know, it was more about efficiency and getting it done quickly and packing it up. And I was running the dolly more than I was, you know, gazing at titles.
That's interesting. You know, they say that when you close a loved one or a family's household, that it's best not to, to dawdle too much or the work will never get done. That's what comes to mind when you say that. If you're just joining us, we're talking with the owner of Driftless Books, Eddie Nix. Last weekend, Eddie trucked the remaining inventory of Paul's books on State Street up to his shop in Viroqua. Eddie, how did the inheritance and the handover of Paul's inventory come about?
Well, they contacted us when they realized, you know, they were closing and were close to the date that they had to be out, which was the end of this month, I guess today. So, you know, like I said, there's not a lot of people who are willing to kind of do this and have the space and the infrastructure to handle that kind of inventory. So they contacted us and we just drove up and did it. It was a pretty simple operation that way. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I think they felt, you know, they were going into good hands, you know.
I bet they did.
It's either that or the dumpster, you know. No one wants that to happen.
Perish the thought there. Take us by the hand and walk us through the front door of an independent bookstore. Describe the experience that awaits a person who steps into a shop like yours.
Well, you know, it's interesting. My office is right by the front door in Viroqua, and when I hear people come in, the first thing they talk about is the old book smell. It's always a very reminiscent thing, you know, to smell those decomposing papers, which is a really wonderful smell. But then it's just kind of an overwhelming sensation of because we have a huge warehouse. It's like 20,000 square feet. So it kind of feels like an endless maze of books and art and beer cans on the wall and weird trinkets everywhere. So we kind of try to maintain a weird museum atmosphere along with just a traditional bookstore feel.
You know what Driftless Books reminds me of?
What?
Powell's Books with a Heart.
Well, that's sweet. I'd tell you the Powell story, but okay. I don't think we have time.
Okay. Maybe if we ever meet, I sure would like to hear that. But as you know, today is a day of economic protest. A national economic blackout is called in protest of federal support of billionaire and corporate policies. People are asked to not spend any money today, but when they do, if it's an emergency, to buy local. But people can buy things like books locally every day of the year, right? Including online.
Yeah, it's a super important part of our business is just the local community. But, you know, and I think this economic protest is a really important step towards just people understanding that they have the power to, you know, determine the future, you know, at least for themselves. And hopefully it'll be a little bit of a wake-up call to the powers that be. Yeah.
Eddie, before I let you go, one last question. What are you reading right now?
Ooh, good question. I'm reading a book on the Shakespeare authorship question, who really wrote Shakespeare, which is one of my pet sort of intrigues. So I'm reading that. Well, I actually have about four books that I'm trying to get through at the moment.
Well, I'm glad I asked you that. And your answer coincided with an sort of kind of what I was hoping that you might say. That's a pretty esoteric answer. Thank you, Eddie Nix. Keep up the good work, and thank you for joining us on the Friday Buzz.
Thank you so much. Have a good day.
You too. Eddie Nix is the owner-operator of Driftless Books in Viroqua. Coco, I would ask you what you're reading right now, but I don't want to put you on the spot.
Well, I think I'm going to start reading that book about did Shakespeare really write Shakespeare? Is that what he just said? Did I hear that right?
I don't know. Did he? I don't know. I don't know. But we're told in other business that the website is back up to wrtfm.org. If you like that last visit and if you like listening to the Friday Buzz and all the programming, it's Winter Pledge Drive if you're just tuning in. And we ask you to call 608-256-2001. The website is back up wrtfm.org. But as Coco says, Mary Lou and Cynthia are really pleasant ways to begin your day. So please give them a call and give us some dough.
Yeah, we need a few more donations here to reach our goal. We have a goal, right?
Yeah, we do. I don't know if you're supposed to say the number, but I'm pretty sure based on seeing paperwork come by, including David Hecht. Thank you, David Hecht, for keeping us alive on the Friday Buzz. Thank you very much.
Well,
and whom else?
Well, we've got another really fun. I'll let you guess who this person is. This person, their favorite WRT shows are the 8 o'clock Buzz and Anything My Brother Does. Molly Rapp.
Oh, Molly, calling from Louisville, Kentucky.
All the way from Louisville.
Oh, dang, that is fantastic. Oh, well, now, if we can get a call from the Commonwealth of Kentucky, we can get a call from the 608-256-2001. We've got musicians in the lobby. That's the way we roll here. And we've got to get some Beatles music in here. You're listening to WRTFM.org, heard around the world and in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, 89.9 FM, WRTFM.org, WRTFM 89.9. It's 848. It's a Friday 8 o'clock buzz. I'm Andy Moore. I love it. I always say this but when live musicians are here because they never complain about the coffee because the coffee is free. Listen to this. From time to time, it's not unusual for compilation albums, greatest hits albums from popular artists of the past to crop up on Billboard's sales charts. But this week, and I don't know if John, if you even know this. The decades-old Abbey Road album by the Beatles popped up on the rock chart at number 41, out
love
of
that.
The blue.
Love that.
I just read that this morning. Just one away from the top 40, magically.
That's crazy.
There's no reissue. There's no anniversary. And so that says a lot. How can the Beatles' music stay fresh over the years? How can their popularity move from one generation to another? And what would happen if a bunch of talented Mattis musicians got together and did an annual live show of Beatles music? Why don't we ask members of Madison Mystery Tour, Steve and Bill, and Sean, how does that happen?
It's the best music we've seen recorded in the Western canon in the last 65 years. So it's got legs.
How does it stay relevant?
Steve, you were there.
Well, I was there. Yeah, I'm. I don't know. For me, it's rediscovery. It's growing up with the Beatles, being away from it for a while, doing other things, and then being in this band. Just the magic of realizing again how incredible this music is. It's a whole second time around for me, learning and appreciating.
Yes, and you know that the popping up of Abbey Road says it all, does it not? I mean,
it really does.
I love seeing that. Yeah.
Yes, and I just this week, Bill. Do you remember your first time you heard the Beatles sing?
Yeah. So you know, like Sean and I are what we would say a second generation fans, right? So we weren't there, or we're barely there, when the Beatles were a unit. But we discovered them, you know, in our youth, and I discovered them through, actually, a good friend of mine introduced me. He played Abbey Road for me in probably about 1978 or so, and I was hooked.
Yeah, I have two television memories, because I was there, but I was a child. My parents got me out of bed in the middle of the night to watch Neil Armstrong walk on the moon, and they let me stay up to see the Beatles on Ed Sullivan.
Nice.
How did Madison Mystery Tour come about, the group?
Well, Steve's the closest thing to a founding member. He joined right after it started.
Sadly, the visionary behind all of this, Aviv Kamai, who happens to be our leader and our youngest member, who is a internationally recognized Beatles scholar, the real deal. He had this idea of forming a band.
You said sadly. He's not dead. He's just not with us.
He's just not here this morning.
Thank you for clarifying that, Sean, because I had him underground.
He's actually a teacher, and he is probably in front of a classroom full of students.
Maybe if you're listening, hello.
Okay, that's good news.
He had the idea, and
he literally ran a newspaper ad.
Yes, he did.
In the Isthmus.
Started accumulating like-minded souls.
Steve joined after the original crew got together. I joined a couple years after that. Bill joined a couple years after that. So we're the new guys.
I'm definitely the new guy.
And you know what? And for the audience to anticipate for the big show tomorrow at the Barrymore, it starts at 7:30. The Magical Mystery Tour program. There will be, in addition to the core band members, briefly talk about. There'll be a goddamn stage full of musicians before
there
the whole
will be.
Over.
It's slightly smaller than the orchestra we had last year, but no small feat. read. It's 16 pieces occasionally. This weekend will be 10 guests, I guess, if you really count them all. Some strings, some horns, some brass, some woodwinds. And they'll be playing on a handful of songs from 65 and 66 that had full orchestration. Yesterday and Eleanor Rigby come to mind.
Oh, fantastic. And you're going to play a song for us now. I want to ask you to do that. Is that where we're headed? We're heading to that song, or what are we going to hear?
No, we were going to play I've Just Seen a Face.
Oh, please do. Okay, here's Madison Mystery Tour actually, live in the Friday Buzz studio. I've Just Seen a Face.
Ready? One, two. I've just seen a face, I can't forget the time or place where we just met. She's just the girl for me, I want all the world to see we've been. Had it been another day, I might have looked the other way, and I'd have never been aware. As it is, I'll dream of her tonight. Die, 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 die. Falling, yes, I'm falling. She keeps calling me back again. I have never known the likes of this. I've been alone and I have missed things and kept out of sight. Other girls, they were never quite like this. Die, 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 die. Falling, yes, I'm falling. And she keeps calling me back again. She keeps calling me back again. Well, I've just seen a face, I can't forget the time or place where we just met. She's just a girl for me, I want all the world to see we've met. Da da da. Falling, yes I'm falling. And she keeps calling me back again. Falling, yes I'm falling. She keeps calling me back again. Oh, I'm falling, yes, I'm falling. And she keeps calling.
Sean Michael Dargan, Stephen Bill, Madison Mystery Tour.
Thanks for having us, Andy.
I've just seen a face. Well, now you're not off the hook yet.
Oh, right.
Colleen and I are going to ask for some more pledge money. Would you guys put your heads together and think of a song you could play us out with to get us off the air? Okay, we'll come back to you in just a couple of minutes. Colleen, what do you think about that?
Well, I think it's great, and I just have to give a shout out to my mom. She went to see the Beatles at Comiskey Park.
Nice. Oh.
Yeah, yeah. She said she didn't hear a thing because it was just so loud and people were just screaming.
I wonder if she still has that ticket stub.
You know what? I'm going to guess she doesn't because she just throws stuff out.
Okay, well, probably for the best.
Right. But, you know, the nice thing about WRT-FM is that we get to hear things like this. If you want to continue to hear great programming like this, you might consider a donation at WORTFM.org or 608-256-2001.
I got to say, we've had a fun hour this hour.
Super fun.
And thank you, Colleen, for being a part of it. As always, a little twinkle more fun when you're here, and I really appreciate it. And Colleen's giving her time, got up early, and she's got to work all day like the rest of us. So, look, well, I'm retired. I'm going to go home and feed the dog. But the point is, this isn't pixie dust, folks. It doesn't happen magically, like Abbey Road popping up on the Billboard charts like magic. No, it happens because you go ahead and you grunt and you groan, and I do when I donate to anything, but it's important. And you call 608-256-2001. The website is back up to wrtfm.org. That's super easy. But please help us out during this winter
pick
pledge drive.
Do what Sean tells you to do. It's almost your month, Sean. It's coming up starting
tomorrow.
It
is almost my month.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Sean's quite
the bagpipes.
The bagpiper. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Oh, my God.
It's an Irish bagpiper. It's a busy month. Yeah.
I forgot. How could I forget about that? And you look pretty good in that kilt, too.
Get
I gotta
out
say.
Of here,
I know
you.
That's sort of a stupid thing to say. But we need money. Let's just cut to the chase here. We need your money, and we want your money. 608 256 2001.
And if you're going to spend money today, Andy,
that was a good Beatles song,
would be
actually.
A great place to spend money is WORTFM.
Yeah, this is a good place. You know what? This is a dang good place. That's because Elliot LeBrun, that's because of Mary Lou, that's because of Cynthia answering the phones. It's because of our engineer without peer, Jim Wilson. It's because of Coco. And it's because of you. If you phoned in, thank you. If you didn't, catch us next time. You're forgiven. But continue to support us with your ears and your heart and your community mindedness. And we want you to belong here because you belong. We're going to go out with another song from Madison Mystery Tour, who will perform live tomorrow night at 7:30 at the Barrymore Theater. Take it away, fellas.
Is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Friday, February 28th.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1942. That was the day that Sue Cowan Williams filed a lawsuit for equal pay for black teachers in Little Rock, Arkansas. 86 black teachers worked in the city's segregated school system. They were all members of the Little Rock Classroom Teachers Association. In 1941, the teachers formed a salary adjustment committee to look into pay discrimination. What they found there was a wide gap between black and white salaries. The average white elementary school teacher made $526 a year, while the black teacher earned only $321. White high school teachers brought home $856 a year, while black teachers only made $567. Backed with this research, the committee presented a petition to the school board demanding an end to pay discrimination. The board tabled the petition, and that summer passed another round of unequal pay raises. The teachers then approached the NAACP and asked them to handle their case. Thurgood Marshall agreed to take up the lawsuit. Marshall would go on to become the first black U.S. Supreme Court justice. Sue Cowan Williams, the head of the English department at Dunbar High School, was selected as the plaintiff for the case. The teachers lost their lawsuit and then won on appeal, but Williams paid a price for her involvement. The next school year, the school